Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us. Welcome, everybody. It's good to have you with us. And Gifty and I are here again together today to talk about a topic which we think is pretty relevant, is entrepreneurship. During COVID, many people decided to leave mainline work and pursue a dream of theirs that they've had for many, many years. So entrepreneurship is in the air right now, and increasingly so as the internet provides us with abilities to run businesses. It's part of very much the fabric of our society. You don't need to be a multi-billion dollar person now to set up a business. So it's very, very relevant. And I'm delighted to have Gifty here, because Gifty has actually been an entrepreneur, and we had to discuss that and get her to tell part of her story. So hi, Gifty. Nice to have you again with us all.
Hi, John. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm actually really enjoying the fact that we are recording in the summer period and we're having such relevant topic. Because like you said, entrepreneurship is something that's, I want to use the word skyrocket, because the pandemic has actually created such a big interest in people wanting to initiate their own business, start a business one way or the other. And like you mentioned, you know, the technology advancement as well is causing that push for it. So a lot of factors are new that are actually contributing to that high increase in the interest when it comes to entrepreneurship. So I'm excited to be here as well.
Right, great. So maybe, you know, to start, because your story is a fascinating one, I know certainly a large part of it, but our listeners don't. What inspired you to become an entrepreneur, and what are the challenges did you face when starting your own business?
Oh, okay, absolutely. Well, I think that is actually one that I can relate to, you know, what is currently happening now, which is that change in the workforce. For myself, which might be quite similar to a lot of the listeners, is one of my coming to Canada, immigrating to Canada. You know, when you come into a new country, there is always that trying to find a balance in terms of where you fit and trying to leverage your cultural capital, which is my experience and my education. So coming into Canada and trying to sort of get accustomed to the workforce was something that sort of pushed my interest in starting my own business. Mm-hmm. And like every immigrant, you know, the job market was one that we are always trying to navigate. And back then, this was 2015, there was still some fluctuation. So it was really important for me to figure out what could I do in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So with that, trying to explore, I was able to very, very, very quickly pick up the fact that there were people who were looking for HR services through my networking. I remember the first month I quickly joined the HR association. So now it's called the CPHR BC and UCAN. Mm-hmm. That was what it was called back then. I was quickly able to join them to volunteer. And this was part of my research process. And while I was doing that, I was getting to pick up that interest in it. So for me, that was perfect and aligned with my passion. My passion has always been to empower people to strive, empower individuals to support those who they work with. So coming to BC, especially Vancouver, because I stayed 1 year in Ontario, it was really interesting to see small, medium-sized businesses who were always trying to find ways to leverage, you know, their presence in the market. And a lot of them didn't have HR consultant on board. A lot of them could not afford a HR department. And I saw that as an opportunity back then. So it was also finding that need that was really important. So being able to do the research, being able to put, let me use this word, put your ears down so you can listen, sort of created that pave for me. And while I did that as well, it was also very important for me to distinguish myself from those that were already in the market. And that distinction keeps growing. So at the beginning, then it was like, okay, we want to do HR, but let's try and focus on what aspect of HR. So it was a one-man show back then. So I just drew on my strength. I knew I was well-qualified in terms of training, well-qualified in terms of managing performance, well-qualified in terms of talent management and talent acquisition. So I just made those three areas my core area as a business owner. So starting there was sole proprietorship. So it was perfect to just capitalize on my strength and, you know, and that's it. While I did that, there were, like you said, some, you know, hiccups.
Right.
So those were always things that I had to navigate. So starting a website, and I started noticing and realizing there were other businesses in there. And I started crafting ways to, you know, navigate those competition, because HR is a competitive landscape.
Very, very.
In a place like this. But while I was trying to find out what's happening and create a distinction, it was also important for me to ensure that my brand was something that was being known. My brand was something that was considered reputable. So all of those things were things I constantly have to navigate every day, even until today, which is years from 2015. So yes, there are challenges that we will be going through, but if that beginning is based on your passion, those challenges become things that you can always work around, because the passion fuels everything, right?
Right.
My story in terms of coming into HR.
I just want to ask you another question around your story, which I think might be relevant to some of the listeners here. When you became an entrepreneur, what role did your previous training and development and business involvement play in a sense, skilling you or providing you with sets of skills that are still useful to you now? I mean, were there any either? Did you have sets of skills that you could bring that were already developed? Because the idea that entrepreneurship is just comes out of a vacuum, I don't think it's so healthy for people, because then they kind of think, well, all my previous training, and that doesn't really matter. But I think it matters hugely. I think see certain instances where it's helped you. So just talk about it all. What you did previously and your entrepreneurship, how did they connect?
Well, I think it connected a lot, because if you're starting a business as an entrepreneur, now, of course, it would depend a lot in terms of how many people are going into the business. At the beginning, you want to draw on your strength, and that's your training, that's your experience, that is what you have. Those are your strengths. So those internal things. So for me, at the beginning, it was very helpful because I could show people what I could do. And as an entrepreneur at the beginning, another true fact was to be able to withstand the highly competitive space when it comes to HR consulting. My strategy then was to give opportunity to potential clients to experience or to understand what I could offer. So that was basically our four services were at no cost. Because I wanted people to see what we could do. Now, everyone could tailor this to their own ability or to whatever they can manage. It could be anything from a free consulting. Because if you're in a new landscape where people don't know you and their competitors who are already known, you have to come up with strategies to be able to show what you can do. So we did a lot of that where it was important for me to for you to see what we could do. And it was also very important for them to see that we had the skills and the talent. So we went through a step. While you're not paying us, we also needed to show you our processes. So for a client to come in, we needed to do an interview with the client. So a lot of people just thought, oh, I just come with you and this is my problem, fix it. So we need to educate our clients in terms of how we did things. And because we were giving them a great deal, they were very on board with it. So people were patient to say, okay, all right, let me answer your question, because we weren't charging you at that time. Then when we gave them the services, then they came back. Then we were able to retain those clients. So it was all about strategy. But yes, your education, your previous experiences must showcase, must be things that will drive you, because at that time, you're new to the market. People need to know what you can do. Mm-hmm. And to do that, you have to literally show them what you can do. So those experiences count a lot.
So sort of try before you buy. And I think that that kind of generosity of spirit, I think people really, really respect that. Because when you sell a service, you're selling, you know, basically a learning field or an energy field. That just sounds so esoteric, but it's not a tangible thing you can pick up in your hand or go and touch. And so people actually need the experience of it. And it's fantastic that you did that. I mean,
Thank you.
That builds huge credibility for people.
It goes a long way. And even till today, I still see a lot of businesses do that. We still do that as well. We always find those ways to, you know, you're still getting something back as a business, but you're also equally giving to the public as well. So I'm glad. That's a very good question. And that actually brings me to a question for you. I know that we always talk about entrepreneurship in that positive light, but we also want to kind of shed more light on it when we say entrepreneurship. I want to know more about success stories that you may have had when it comes to entrepreneurship. So why don't you share a success story of a startup? Because I know you've had a startup, John, right? That you overcame, you know, share with our listeners some of those achievements, how those contributed to growth and success, and what were the key factors behind the success?
Sure. So, I mean, I'll talk about myself later on, but what I thought about was sharing a success of a business that's now a huge business. And it's actually a group that I previously worked for in a director capacity, the ILSC Greystone Group. Because I know quite a bit of their story, and particularly the entrepreneurial aspect to it, and it's quite a remarkable story. So I'm going to compress many years into a couple of statements here, but there are things that when I got to know their story and understood it and met with the founders, that truly, blew my mind, and they blew my mind because they are so common sense and so repeatable that anybody can replicate these if they put their minds to it. So the ILSC group is a language training school, a hugely successful one. It's now global. And what branched off that was the Greystone Business College School for international students. But how it started is for me, the entrepreneurial roots of it are absolutely fascinating. The gentleman's name was Paul that started it. And Paul's background was that he traveled the world basically as an itinerant language teacher for many, many years. So he lived in various countries and was able to teach second language just as a small, independent, kind of one-man band. And as I say, he lived globally in many, many different cultures. And the key thing he did, which I thought was quite extraordinary, was he was never even thinking at that stage of, you know, launching this huge business or starting a massive business, but he was wide awake. And he was looking at all these different cultures and all these different countries he taught in. And he was constantly kind of asking himself in the back of his mind the question, how do you teach language effectively? How do you teach particularly the English language to second language English speakers? What's the magic ingredient here that makes for great teaching and that gets people to acquire language quickly and also gets you able to communicate and accelerate their language development? And what he realized, which is now quite common knowledge, but then certainly wasn't, was that you teach language via life. So you've got to get people to go and do things, everyday things that they do in everyday life. And if they're professionals, to be able to develop language within their professional career. But this is relevant to them. So language is best learned if it's contextual. Now, prior to this, language teachers, many of them had grown up with the notion that, or been taught the notion that you get people into a classroom, you pull out the grammar book And that's how you teach language, kind of very old school, literally school style teaching of language. But he realized that actually contextual teaching of language, so for example, if people want to learn how to do art and paint, construct an English language around an art lesson, right? So you're teaching them art, but in the process of which you're teaching them English. Yeah? And of course, then language acquisition becomes less fearful because you're doing something you love, you want to learn about, and by the way, you're also learning some English.
Mm-hmm.
So when he came back to Vancouver after many, many years travel around the world, this notion crystallized in his head, and then he began basically a language school where there's very simple methodology. He said, we'll teach language through life, and he started with his own class and then employed another teacher and ensured that they understood this concept, that it wasn't just about teaching pure language, but you were going to teach other stuff, and language, as in all sense, is like a byproduct of it. It became something that you taught alongside it. Let's say not a byproduct, you taught alongside it. And very soon, his little language school in Vancouver, in a very competitive market, just like HR, there were lots of these different language schools, but mainly of the old school type. It multiplied. His school got very, very big, very quickly. But he's not the accountant. And he realized, and this is one of the crucial things I think was very smart, that he realized that actually when things get too big, I'm not an administrator. That's not my core skill. I inspire people. I understand the mechanics of teaching language through life, but I certainly don't do scheduling well and all the other stuff that goes with it. And so he found a business partner who was an accountant, who had this very structured approach. And it was a kind of like the other half of his personality. And that's what I thought was great about that part of the story, that you don't have to know everything and be everything as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But you have to have a network of people that you can plug into.
I absolutely agree. And just build on what you talked about in terms of, not just teaching language, the old school. And that's something that is being realized today, where we talk about that customer-centric approach.
Yes.
People and your own process and the tailoring of that language to fit what people really enjoy is almost the same thing we talk about when we say innovation, right? Creating something unique that is specific to you. And a lot of this can only happen by actually understanding that particular area. So teaching of language is driven by his passion of what he thinks language learning should be all about and what he thinks people would want. So that's absolutely very, very great story.
Great. And what he did was he submerged himself in the field, right? And he was traveling and teaching himself. There's one other bit I want to add to the story. So we talk about the administrator, and you get the administrator on board, and then the business grows some more. Mm-hmm. And then they face another decision about how much do they want to grow and what sort of capitalization they need. And then they went and found some equity partners to further capitalize the business. And what's quite interesting for me is when they approached these equity partners, they already had a working model, a clear working model that could demonstrate results. So they had, in a sense, something to really sell or to leverage the finances they needed against something that really was working. In other words, the recipe was really good and they could prove, okay, here's the cake, and taste it. You can see it. Which I think is another very smart thing for entrepreneurs. I've dealt with a lot of entrepreneurs and I've been on entrepreneur training programs or I've done the training myself and mentored them. And, there's this whole thing of get my business plan and take it to the bank. And then you've got to have something more than sometimes a business plan to take to the bank. You've got to actually be able to show that this actually works. And the degree to which you do that is how you build your confidence. I'm not saying you don't have a good business plan or have a good accounting structure. That's all necessary. But beyond that, kind of to test driven, as you've done with your business, for example. You've got results behind you now, clear, definable results, and they can talk to people. That's just part of the story I want to share. And I thought that's a
very inspiring story. Really, really great story. The sources aspect, the factors behind the sources is actually very, very more so relevant today. Uh-huh. Thank you.
Until next time, this is Gift Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.